station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and international parental abduction. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help, and new innovations in these areas. With over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate enough to meet and work with some of the top professionals in these fields. I will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. I'm thrilled to have as my guest today one such talented professional, Dr. Shelley Zavala. Dr. Zavala is a recognized presenter in neurobiology and spirituality and assists clients in her successful private practice by teaching them to take ownership of their lives by creating a life through intention. Dr. Zavala has been working with clients on understanding intention for the past 10 years and has appeared on Bravo Television and numerous radio shows. Dr. Zavala has a bachelor's degree in cultural anthropology and a master's degree in counseling psychology and a doctorate in clinical psychology. She is also a licensed family and marriage therapist. Over the past 10 years, Dr. Zavala has continued seminars and training for therapists, businesses, and not-for-profit organizations. Dr. Zavala, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. I'm gonna bring you up a little bit louder here.
Okay.
All right. Well, I've got to tell you, I had the opportunity to learn more about you, about your seminars, and I have been very impressed.
Thank you.
I think to start off with, I know you have a seminar coming up on intuitive joy.
Exactly.
So let's just start with, how do we find our intuitive joy?
Well, this is a great question, and it's not where we think we would find it because it's not outside of us. And even as we go through these difficult times as families or financially, it's really about finding this joy within us, about who we are in this world. And it's about slowing down and getting back to the basics about what's important, and that is connection with each other, relationships. And with ourselves, a relationship with ourselves. And we so often get lost in that and finding that we need to bring in money or we need to be a certain way in society, and it really doesn't help us. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, but for all the listeners, let's give us some examples.
Well, one of the often complaints people come in with is anxiety and depression. And often that's caused because their sense of self has come from, well, I need to be successful in my career, or I need my kids to be a certain way. And when they can drop that and realize that their happiness is more determined by who they are in the world, they feel better about themselves. You know, it's interesting looking at studies because, you know, we always think money brings more happiness, even though we hear it doesn't. It really doesn't, and the studies show it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But what does is gratitude and optimism and kindness, some really basic things that we can do no matter what's happening in our life.
Well, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I travel throughout the world, and I end up in countries, and most recently I was in Dominican Republic, and as we went through villages where the kids are playing soccer barefoot on a very hard gravel surface, and they're laughing and they're playing and they're running and they're just having the greatest time. And I could envision the same thing, and I thought, you know, if I had the same thing in Orange County, California, I mean, we'd have a bunch of kids complaining about the fact either that their feet hurt or that why weren't they provided a proper place to play soccer.
Exactly. And that's because we've been conditioned, Alan. Mm-hmm. We've been conditioned that that's what we need to be happy. And it's such a short-lived happiness. You feel good for a moment, and then you're back down to how you used to feel. You know, the studies that they did on, like when we go through a difficult time, for example, that only lasts about 3 months, a good or a bad experience. So you get a job promotion. The feel-good chemicals from that only last for about 3 months. But you go and do something good for someone else, and that shows a long-term effect. And part of this is because we get stuck in this fear mode, and we cannot be loving and joyful and be in fear at the same time. They work at different parts of the brain. So if we're looking for what we can get, or we're in fear or anxiety, we cannot be thinking about joy.
Well,
and there's actually a... Sorry.
Oh, no, no, go ahead. I'm going to say that. That makes perfect sense.
This is chemically laden. Our body releases different chemicals when we're in fear, and our blood actually flows differently when we're in fear than when we're in joy. So it weakens our immune system. It releases neuropeptides that are not good, whereas if we're in joy or in happiness, it's actually releasing chemicals that make us stronger and feel better and increase our immune system.
Well, based on where our economy has been going the last year and a half or so, are we having a huge influx of people not finding their joy?
Absolutely. And I think that's sort of what's happening in this world right now, Alan, is we're coming into this conceptual age where we've spent a lot of time thinking that information and technology and having was success. And with what's happening in the economy, we're coming back to the basics and really realizing that joy is really experienced through our relationships and by being with ourselves and being with each other and what we can do for each other. And that's just such a different train of thought, but it really goes back. It's how families used to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do we get off the negative path when life seems to have gotten us started down it?
We have to first start looking at what is still joyful in our lives, what's working in our lives now, and actually staying in an appreciation of that. Because as soon as you start looking at what's negative, what happens in the brain is you start creating these receptor connections. And it's like sort of a roadway that's repeated every day, and that's what you know. And your brain automatically wants to go to these negative parts. It's sort of like a safety mechanism. So we have to start creating a change. And that's by consciously, when you notice yourself thinking negatively, you've got to do like a roadblock. Nope, not going there. Let's look at what is good today.
Mm-hmm.
Or what is this inviting me to learn? If things are not going well, what is this inviting me to learn? Because if you stay on the same track, you're going to get more of the same.
Well, when you mentioned about within our brain, us going to this level of negativity that's almost like a safety zone, how long has this been like this? I mean, is this something that goes back to, you know, the beginning of humanity, or is this something that is more of a 20th century phenomenon for us?
I think it's something that's been around forever. It's our instinct, our survival mode. If we focus on the negative, we're going to be okay. But now we're realizing, I mean, it's really only been the last 20 years, Alan, that we've mm-hmm. realized how we can shift our brain. Since we've been able to do MRIs and we can actually see live brains rather than, you know, when people have passed and then we looked at them, we can see how we can change them. It's really quite phenomenal. So now we don't have to live with what we've genetically been given. We now get, it's like a test pattern on a TV.
Mm-hmm.
The gene is that test pattern. It's always going to stay the same in the sense that that's your gene. But you can change the hue, the color, the shading, the shape, and that's what we can do with our brain, is by consciously making choices, we can shift things in our life so we're not stuck genetically like we used to think with unhappiness or depression or anxiety, or, you know, how many times can you say, well, I've got no hope, my mom's overweight, so I'm going to be overweight, and that's not true. We're actually able to shift that at a genetic level now.
Well, and I'm not sure if I'm putting you on the spot, but I know that, for instance, and when I had Dr. Art Uhlein on the show, and I knew that he had done some particular types of relaxation, meditation types of things that would actually, it would slow your heart rate down.
Yes, absolutely.
And he would do this in his seminars, and it was beautiful because there would be a number up on the screen, and nobody would know what the number is. But as he was being asked questions, you would see the number go up and down as his own anxiety level went up and down. But then he would take everybody through a relaxation, and you would see his go down on the screen.
Absolutely.
My question as, or my thought as I'm hearing you say this is there something that you can give people that can be done over the air that they can do to help bring them to that point, that can help bring them to more of a level of inner peace or happiness?
Absolutely, and it's the simplest thing, and it's just by when you notice you're anxious, you notice your heart is racing, or you notice you're not feeling very good, is to stop and breathe. And the next step is wiggle your toes. And it sounds really simple, but most of us are living in this fight or flight breath, which mm-hmm. keeps us into the amygdala. And the amygdala is a little worn-up piece in the brain that's just on the brainstem. It's one of the first parts of the brain that develops while you're in the womb. And the problem with the amygdala is it's all fear-based. It's all about reaction. So often we're living in the world coming from that fear, coming from reaction. So breathing, by stopping and breathing, is it brings you into the frontal lobe. And that is the part where we're able to think through things, we're able to make choices, we're able to be logical, we're able to be kind to ourselves, we're responding. We get to make choices from that place. So by stopping, breathing, slowing down, wiggling the toes, grounds us, gets us back connected into the body.
Okay.
And then the self-talk.
And then
to start being nice.
And then are they closing their eyes for this?
You can do it. You know, when you get good at this, you can do it any time. It's just something I do on a constant basis in my life. I could be sitting with a client, or I could be in a seminar. I could be doing anything. And if I start to notice any anxiety or any uncomfortable feelings or a negative thought pattern that I get stuck in, I just go stop, breathe, wiggle my toes. And my favorite saying is, it's okay. It's okay. And it just brings me back down to being, I am okay in this moment. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have. I just need to be with this moment. It's very impactful. I mean, we've shown the studies, they're studying monks a lot these days because they're just seeing how incredible what they can do through meditation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a more extended breathing exercise, and where they're able to lower their heart rate down and actually keep their bodies warm in freezing temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So we're so capable of doing so much more. The problem is we don't take that information and use it like we need to, because we're so much in survival mode.
Well, obviously you can't see me. I'm smiling because I love the part about the breathing, and it's one of the things that I do. But I'd love for you to tell us where the wiggling the toes part fits in.
Well, it gets us, what happens when we're in that fight or flight and we're in that amygdala, we're not breathing properly, and we've sort of disconnected the body from the brain. So by wiggling our toes, it gets us, again, out of the amygdala, because the amygdala, again, is like that crocodile. It's not thinking, it's not processing, it's not being aware of its body. See, part of the problem we have is our subconscious mind is processing 20 million pieces of information a second. Our conscious is only processing 20.
Wow.
Okay? So by breathing and wiggling our toes, we can be a lot more conscious of our environment. And we're not just reacting to it like a crocodile. We can now make choices rather than an emotional fight or flight like a crocodile does. You try and rationalize with a crocodile, it doesn't work. And this is a big part that I teach my clients, is especially families, is you cannot rationalize when someone's in that amygdala. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So if a parent breathes, wiggle their toes when their teenager's out of control, they're going to get a better response. By grounding themselves, feeling their body, they're able to think through what's going on and not react, but they can respond.
Well, and this sounds like it's akin to the old thing of stop, breathe, count to 10.
Yes, absolutely.
And but you're not only giving yourself time for it, but you're also giving them time for it.
Absolutely. Because if you ground yourself, because we have these things called mirror neurons, right? And what happens is, that's why when someone yawns, I mean, we're still not 100% sure on this, but we believe that if someone yawns, we tend to yawn.
Yes.
It's because of these mirror neurons. So if you're calming yourself down, they're more likely to calm themselves down. No guarantees, but they're more likely to.
Right, and I get that also from the studying of NLP with the neuro-linguistic programming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this is another important point on this too, and it's very interesting, what we call harmonic resonance. And it's about how our energy is. So if we're having a positive thought but a negative experience, they cancel each other out. So the idea is, no matter what, so you don't have that positive experience anymore. So the goal is to, no matter what your experience is, to not only have the positive feeling, but even have a positive thought about the experience. And it becomes more like a times table. So, you know, instead of 3 plus 3 equals 6, it's 3 plus 3 times 3 is 9. You create such a better experience, even when it's a difficult experience. I hope that's making sense.
Well, it does. It does. And, I mean, it sounds to me like it's a, for lack of better terms, a numbers game. But, yeah, you know, I've had discussions about it saying, well, you know, for every time that you, if I'm talking, for instance, with children or something, for every time that you have a negative thought or a negative comment about someone, you know, try to have 5 good ones.
Exactly.
You know, so that you can not only cancel it out, but leave yourself in a very positive frame of mind yourself.
Exactly, because you're changing the chemicals again that are released in the body. It doesn't do you any good having that negative thought. And I'm not playing Pollyanna here. It's not that you're not going to have negative thoughts. It's what you do with it, because that creates our feelings. And our feelings have a lot of impact on our actions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to sort of go, you know what, don't need to go there. You might start thinking about something negative. Either you feel it and grieve it and let it go, or you just go, that's not important. What's really important here? And I think that's such an important piece to remember with our kids. Is that we don't want to be, I see a lot of families where the parents overindulge, and, oh, you're so wonderful. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about getting people. I'm talking about being felt by people. And that's where joy really comes from. It's not always about just boosting their ego. It's about really connecting with them and hearing them.
That's what I was going to say, a true connection.
Exactly.
And I think people, especially, you know, in this day and age, I mean, they read very quickly, you know, someone who sounds like they're just complimenting them for the sake of complimenting them.
Exactly, and they're not really about the actual connection.
Right.
And that's what I think we're just craving, Alan, in this day and age, and I'm hoping we're coming back to these basics of really being got by each other and connecting and being there for each other.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Now, tell us a little bit about, I know that you have an upcoming seminar that that talks a lot about intuitive joy.
Yes.
Can you give us sort of an outline or something of what it is that you'll be going through in that seminar, you know, how long it is and such, so that we can get an idea of, if somebody were to go to that, what they can really think that they're going to get out of it?
Okay. Well, first of all, you can check out my website, which is lifethroughintention.com, and through is spelt the English way, THROUGH, intention.com. And what I do is I run actually 4 seminars a year, and this is the second one of the year. They can do all 4 or just one of them. And I just did one in January, which is Living Intentionally. This one is Intuitive Joy, and all 4 seminars run with the same basis. On Friday night, it goes from 6:30 to 9, and really we look at core values at that time. We look at your core, who are you? What's important to you? And this time we're looking more at virtues. What are your virtues, and how are you going to use those in different areas of your life? Because what's interesting is we're now understanding that if you don't live with your values and what's important, you cannot be joyful. It's that important to us.
Right.
That we need to be very clear of what those are. But how often do we ever get taught that? How often do your parents ever talk to you about happiness? Because that is the base to happiness. Then Saturday, it runs from 9 to 5. And I spend the morning, we really do a large section. I show DVDs, I lecture. It's more cognitive. we do the neurobiology piece. So really get into understanding the brain. The last seminar was more about the neurons and the receptor connections. This one's more the cellular level, understanding those 50 trillion cells that we have and how we can manipulate those. So that's the morning session. In the afternoon, we come back and it's more experiential. So we do exercises that will assist you, that you can go home with and actually hold on to now create a shift in your life. And that goes, I said, roughly to about 5 o'clock. What's great is I also do a teleconference in about 6 weeks after the seminar to see what changes people have made.
Oh, I like
and
that.
It's incredible. It's so rewarding to see the shift of what people have done, because I understand you need more than just knowledge. You've got to have that hands-on experience, which is what we do in the afternoon.
Well, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, and you actually just answered one of the questions that I had written down, and that is, what is the level of aftercare or follow-up? Because I think that's important, and I think that's one of the things that's missed a lot in some of the different seminars and programs out there, is if there isn't any follow-up, so many of us are so busy, we learn something, we go right back into our daily routine, and really don't have enough follow-up to make sure that we put it in place and make it a part of our life.
And that's so key. 98% of seminars, people don't do anything with it. And that's when I was designing these seminars, that was really key to me, because I'm not just here to give a lecture. I really, truly want people to get this. And so one of the things I found is I'm working right now getting some mastermind groups going from the seminars. And to be honest, a couple of them are set up without me doing anything. A couple of the groups just decided to meet monthly. And that was out without me even organizing it. But that's how impactful this information is. When you get it, it's just so exciting. And then we also, if they're interested, we set people up as pairs as accountability. Mm-hmm. So I have probably about a third of the seminar are still connecting with somebody else, and they mentor each other with the work that we did in the seminar.
Oh, so that's great.
It's just so cool to see what people do and how they hold on to it. And this is where families get affected, because if one person makes a shift, then they go home and their spouse or their children or their parents, they start to feel the change.
Mm-hmm. And
it's that ripple effect.
Right, and if I understand you right, you said that you're setting up accountability partners right there before they leave.
Exactly.
Oh, I love that.
Exactly. And then I have another seminar in 3 months if they want to come to the next one. And that the idea of having 4 a year is to get those receptors in the brain working at a level where they hold this.
Now, what are the age groups in attendance? You know, you mentioned about going back home to the family, but I mean, how many of them actually bring the family, and what would be the logical age range?
Well, that's what's so interesting, because I have probably my youngest attendant has been 14, mm-hmm. and the oldest has been 78.
So, I love it.
It's really, and it depends on where that person's at. I have a lot of college students attend, and I probably, real range, a lot of professionals. I have a lot of people who own businesses attend, families. I have a lot of couples, too. This time I know I've got a couple of people bringing their kids with them. I had a couple of people last time bring their parents. So
it's just
you've got to be interested. That's really it. I speak at a level that I make sure I connect with everybody. That's so key to me. It's a personal program, and I make sure that I go around and everybody's getting at their level what they want to get out of the seminar. That's key.
Now, so have you gotten feedback in regards to, you said you do the follow-up, the feedback you got in regards to the teenagers, did they feel like they got it as well as the adults?
Yes. In fact, I had one of my teenagers say I had never experienced joy before until
now.
And more cooperation. But they've got to want to be there, Alan. That's the thing. You don't want to drag your teenager there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's not going to work. But if they're open to learning and growing and the possibility that something could be different between them, I find when you come with a friend or a person that you know, because we do some exercises where you're discussing with a partner, mm-hmm. You know, there can be a lot of tears. And it's not, you know, a lot of people say, well, this sounds more like a girl thing, and it's not. I have probably a third of the people who come are men, and I have actually just as many men getting up and speaking and sharing the shifts as I do women. It's just, I just have it where it's balanced between the cognitive part and the experiential. But the teenagers, when they get it easier in a way, Alan, mm-hmm. because their brain isn't quite so full. So when they get it, they run with it.
Oh, I think that's great. And especially right now, I know one of the things that is very frustrating to me is that, you know, we have this tendency to focus on the doom and gloom. You know, our yeah. you know, television does it, our news does it. I mean, it's gotten to the point to
Absolutely.
Where, and I don't even want to watch it anymore, and I,
nope.
I don't want my kids watching it. It's just so much doom and gloom. And then, I speak at a lot of the schools, and when I'm speaking at the schools and I get the feedback from the kids, and I'm going, well, you know, wonder they're having so many, so much trouble with a lot of different things. That's what they're getting. That's what they're seeing as their future is doom
Absolutely.
And gloom.
Absolutely. So. And of course, what are you reinforcing in the brain then? Because the brain is like a computer in the sense that it's going to just take it in and it's going to put it in a filing cabinet. And every time you watch the news again, it's going to bring it up and just reinforce. And you've got a reinforced pattern. I mean, I hate to say it, but I don't watch the news. I choose not to watch anything that's going to reinforce negativity.
I agree.
What's the point? What's it going to give me? I always look at it, anything I do, what's it going to give me? Is it going to make a difference in the world? Is it going to make a difference in my life or my family's life? And if not, I don't do it.
Well, I
doesn't
like
mean
it.
I don't eat chocolate, but there's some enjoyment in that.
That's right.
It's I'm really cautious what I put in my life.
Well, like I said, I couldn't agree more. We've got a couple of listener questions. I want to make sure that I get these in. In fact, as I've mentioned before, I've actually been chastised by not getting them in. So I'm going to read them off as they have sent them in. One says, I have a child who is suffering with anxiety. She constantly worries about things that aren't even happening. It seems to be getting worse. I try to counsel her, or to console her, I'm sorry, but that doesn't seem to help. What type of therapy should I consider sending her to?
Well, this is where I think cognitive behavioral therapy is actually very helpful. It's very basic, and especially if it's a teenager, I really encourage with teenagers, because I used to work at a school district, and so I learned a lot hands-on here of what teenagers like and don't like, and it's really key for teenagers. It's someone who's interactive, and it's someone who, again, gets them, but they sort of give them skills. So some cognitive behavioral, because anxiety is all about being in that amygdala again, and they're reacting to life, and it feels very real to them. You don't want to dismiss their feelings. You want to acknowledge that, yes, they're really scared about these things, even if they're not real. Remember, if you're in the amygdala, it doesn't matter if you say to them, no, they're not real, those are just, you know, anxieties you're having. You're trying to argue with a crocodile again. So you actually more want to go with the teenager and say, or the child, I understand this is what you're really scared about. Well, let's see what we can do. Why don't we find someone who can help you with this? And definitely with teenagers, you want to find a therapist who gets teenagers and not just send them to yours or someone else's therapist that's been recommended. Someone who's a little bit more outgoing, a little bit more upbeat. Teenagers need that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And actually, this might be a good time. How would they get a hold of you? What would be the best way for anybody? Because I realize we're not taking live calls yet in regards to this show. So those of you, if you have additional questions, how can they get a hold of you either because of a question you've answered or another question they may have?
There's a couple of ways they can call me. My direct number is 949-597-7217. Again, 949-597-7217. Or they can email me at drzavala@mac.com, and that's drzavala@mac.com. And I'll be quite happy to answer anybody's questions on this. I'm very passionate about making a difference in this, and be happy to return any of those phone calls or emails.
Well, it's very much appreciated. And one of the other things I want to touch on, and I know the upcoming seminar is in Irvine, California.
That's correct.
Are all of them in Southern California?
At this point, as far as the ones that I put on, I do go into corporations. I've done speaking internationally. I also go into nonprofits, and those are all over the country. I've been all over the country for those speaking engagements. But the ones that I specifically put on at this point are just in Irvine.
Okay.
As I grow this program, I'm hoping to expand that because along with doing the seminars, I also have a giving back program. This is one of the key parts to joy. You must give back.
Mm-hmm.
And my last seminar, I have a program where I go up to LA every 3 months and donate whatever stuff I've collected and give all what I have to the homeless. So the last time we collected blankets and jackets, and we had over 400 to give out. Very exciting.
Oh, that's great.
And this time we're collecting bags because we notice a lot of them carry all their stuff around in trash bags.
Mm-hmm.
So this time at my seminar, we're going to be collecting any bags that people have. We buy some water. We take out some food. And these people, it's pretty amazing watching them, Alan, because, you know, they're very polite. We just stop somewhere. We open the back of our cars, and we had four carloads. And just watching, you know, they were polite. They were just so appreciative of what we brought up to them because we weren't expecting anything in return.
Right.
And we just gave freely. So that's something I do with my seminars as well. And I get so much joy from that. You can't put a price on it.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that I do, and I do it with my own boys and some of their friends, but we put together as much stuff as we possibly can. Usually it's clothing, shoes, toys, and things. And we bring an extra trailer, a trailer full, and we go down to Mexico to some of the orphanages down there. And then, but we have the kids come with us so that at that point they get to hand it out to the kids. They're there, they're seeing the joy that these kids are having by receiving these things. And one of the things that I was most happy with is we went down the following year. And as we went down the following year, one of my boys said, "Look, see that boy over there? He's wearing my old sweatshirt."
Oh, that's funny. Oh, that is great.
I loved it. But we were in a completely different part of Mexico.
Oh.
And it was just so great that he could recognize the shirt. And,
yes.
And but so it not only gave him joy when he initially gave it away, but there was an additional joy that came to him when he went down the next year and really saw that these kids were wearing these and that they were enjoying them, appreciating them. I'm just so thrilled when we can do that.
Okay. See how that stayed with him? See
Absolutely.
The joy? That's what we need to create. That is what we call a long-term joy factor.
Yep.
And it's because he was doing one of those staple things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those key things is self-acceptance. And you see, when you're anxious, you're not accepting yourself. That's one of the biggest determinants of joy. If you're judgmental of yourself, you're not going to be in joy. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to lighten up and be a little kinder to ourselves and to others.
Yep. Well, let me go to another question. We have a question that says, "My 29-year-old daughter was estranged from her family for nearly a year. During that time, she suffered with post-traumatic stress syndrome and extreme depression. She continues today to suffer with guilt for being separated from her family for a long period of time. Who should she turn to?"
Well, post-traumatic stress disorder, what's so interesting, again, it's like the anxiety. You're coming from that amygdala. You're coming from receptor sites that have been sort of imprinted. You think about so something that's happened in your childhood and how that gets imprinted on your brain, positive or negative. And that's what post-traumatic stress syndrome is like. It's like you've got this emotional imprint that keeps being triggered. So he or she definitely needs to speak to somebody, be it a therapist or someone that can listen to her and talk about what's gone on, what that trauma is about for them. And then they have to start creating what I call a roadblock after the grief, after the processing, is creating roadblocks in that receptor connection so it doesn't have as much power. And then what can happen is you can create a new receptor connection, a different way of seeing and viewing what that trauma was about for them. One of my favorite questions, which one of my mentors taught me many years ago, is I teach people to ask, what is this inviting you to learn about your life? And with trauma, once you've you know, you've got to go through that grief process, some of that healing process. But what did you learn from that experience? How do you come out now with growth, with understanding? So absolutely finding a good therapist, and that's the key, finding a good therapist who can really support her and work through that process and help her not only go back to the basic level of functioning, but also help her grow from that experience. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And one of the thoughts that I have is, I mean, how long, and I you know, this may be a, one of those, the answer may be how long is a piece of string, but, you know, how, I mean, how long in some of these situations in a trauma like this where they're referring to it as post-traumatic stress disorder, how long do you need to re-input positive messages to be enough to get beyond that?
Okay, well, the basic understanding we have, and this is a, you know, the situation with post-traumatic stress, it's usually a lot longer than this, but if we look at the basic understanding of the brain, is I believe it was in the 1980s, the astronauts were given these glasses because they wanted them to get used to seeing things upside down. So the glasses would make them see the world upside down. But what they found after 26 to 30 days that they would put the glasses on and they would still see things right side up because the brain creates a new receptor, a new receptor connection, what we call a synapse connection, within 26 to 30 days. So that's how long it actually takes us if we're consistent every day at working on something. That's how we change a habit, okay? So with trauma, obviously it takes a little bit longer than that because we're dealing with an emotional piece here, a wound. But with consistent therapy, I typically find people can shift a serious trauma anywhere from really 3 months, 6 months, and sometimes it's as long as 2 years. But depends on where that person's at, what their base level of functioning was like prior to that. But the brain is so clever at rewiring itself that when someone really wants to do some work and is really ready to work through it, 30 days and they can actually shift some of that long term. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it certainly does. Because I know that, you know, with us dealing with some of the teenagers that we're working with, some of them have gone through a very traumatic situation. I mean, we deal with some young girls that have been raped, some that have been brought into human trafficking. They've been abused, and that's why I know that. I mean, in one sense, I realize it's like how long is a piece of string. It kind of depends on what they've gone through.
Yeah.
But if there's some basic things that we can know about those, we can go in with that, realizing it may take more. But it certainly helps to tell somebody that there is a chance that in 30 days they're going to be on the road to recovery or on the road to having worked beyond this, as opposed to believing, well, what if it's going to take years? It's harder for them, I think, to grasp that.
Exactly. And that's where I think that's what I love about neurobiology and what a lot of people say coming to my seminars is that it now makes sense to them. And if you can cognitively understand something, it's like if you have one of these paintings and you don't know anything about art and you look at it and you have an impression of it. But if you start to understand who he was as a person and how he saw things through his eyes, you would start to experience the painting differently.
Mm-hmm.
You would sort of empower yourself more about understanding the painting. And it's the same here when we can empower people by knowledge. It's one part. It's not the only part, but it's an important piece, I believe, because if we can understand it, now we can go and use that information to help ourselves. And so that's where I feel I'm a little bit different than a lot of therapists because I do quite a bit of education on the brain because it gives people that ability to now go, okay, I just need to do this, and this is how it works, so that makes sense to me.
Well, and I think that's incredible because you're taking away part of the mystery.
Exactly, and it's not this woo-woo thing that you just go and talk for 50 minutes. There's actually more to it, and that's why the consistency, like I always give clients homework.
Mm-hmm.
As much as they don't always want it, they have to do it because it's that consistency with the brain to make that shift.
Well, can you explain a little bit more? Because I think a lot of people out there may not have really heard of or been introduced to neurobiology. So why don't you break that down a little bit for them?
Okay. But neurobiology, it really is about understanding ourselves at a cellular level. It's understanding how the brain works, understanding how the cell works. And when we get an understanding how we're able to manipulate the brain or understand how to manipulate ourselves at a cellular level, is we realize we've got the power to shift things in our lives. If we can understand that just because our parents say we have a history of depression, by understanding our depression at a cellular level, at a brain level, we now can choose to do something differently with it, because it's like, as we talked about in the beginning, that test pattern. Maybe you are have a predisposition to depression. You do not need to be depressed. So it's now, how do you manipulate that gene so it doesn't have the same power? Is it easy? No. Is it simple to understand? Yeah, it's pretty simple, but you have to choose to want to do something different than what you've always been doing. Okay?
Right.
To give you an example, I actually was diagnosed as having a lot of learning disabilities. I had severe dyslexia. Got told I'd never go to college, you won't make it. And I have chosen to shift that for myself and did my degree, my master's and my doctorate, and chosen to do something different. We all are capable of that. I'm no different than the next person. But if we can understand how to do that, step A, step B, step C, so there's the understanding. So if we can understand how the receptors in our brain, we have neurons, they're the cells, and off a neuron comes a receptor. And that receptor grows or it can die. Okay, it's like if you think of like a round circle as your cell and think of that string coming off the cell, and we have power to either reinforce that receptor or have it go away. When a receptor creates another connection with another receptor, is called a synapse connection. Once that's connected, that's like a habit. So what I teach people is that we're in control what we want to join, what connectors we want to have in our brain, and this is how we do it. So we'll talk through what do you want to see. We do a vision, an ideal of how they want to see their lives, and then we create, how do we create those receptors around that life? We do, like with teenagers, I love to do collages. Things that have to have an emotional pull too, because the more emotionally laden something is, the stronger that receptor connection is. Is this making sense?
Yes, it is. And I does my voice sound a little bit different? I've now switched microphones to see if this one was better, because I was getting a little bit of feedback.
Okay.
How am I coming through to you? Does it sound better?
It sounds fine. I sound fine. I mean, you sound fine to me.
Okay, good. Now, with what you were just talking about, is this something that you have the time to go into, even in the seminars?
Oh, I go into great detail with it. We spend from 9 o'clock Saturday morning till 12 o'clock, and this is all we talk about. And I show videos around it. I have some great funny things, clips. It's phenomenal. When people get it in the seminar, it is just great, Alan, because I show these clips about how we are so oblivious to our environment, and people don't believe it. And so I show these video clips and how people miss these things in the video clips, and they go, no way, no way, that's not in the video. And I re-show the video, and sure enough, I don't want to give it away just because someone comes to the seminar, but it's just so cool when we get that we only see what we want to see. We only see whatever our focus is. So if our focus is negative, that's what we're going to see.
Right.
And we're not going to see all the other stuff. And we work a lot on that in the seminar. So absolutely, the morning is all just the neurobiology.
Well, and you know, and I think that's a great point. And it's one of the things that, and I know that Tony Robbins speaks of it. And one of the things that he says is that if you plant a negative point in your mind, and if somebody says, can you go get me something, and it's in such and such a cupboard, and if you go, I don't want to go get that, you go get it. And they go, well, no, I need you to go get that thing and stuff. Look, I've looked for that before. I don't know where that is. And if you tell yourself enough times that you don't know where that is, what will happen is that somebody else will then go, they'll get it, and it will be the thing that is directly in the front.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it'll be right in the front, and yet you have told your brain that it is not there, so much so that you will look right through it and see everything else that's there, but not exactly what you were supposed to find.
Exactly. And that's the thing, we don't realize if we don't live from our unconditioned self, if we don't live consciously, we're just on automatic pilot, and we're missing all these amazing things. I mean, think about the stories you hear out there of, like, the guy who had the false leg and ran in the Olympics. People who, look at Helen Keller, look at the amazing stories in our history, mm-hmm. or even today. I love the story Jack Canfield talks about, a guy from Australia who was 61 and ran I think it was a 500-mile race. He'd never run a race in his life. And not only did he run it, he won it by 9 hours.
Wow.
Before anyone else. You would think that's impossible.
By 9 hours?
9 hours. He won by, he beat the record by 9 hours. Because in his mind, it was probably a little bit of ignorance, but in his mind, he was just going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was determined. He'd run a farm for many years, and he had not had a negative thought about it. He didn't have any doubt. And the problem is, doubt is like weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how hard weeds are to get out.
Right.
And they strangle the positive. So when we want something good, we are so capable, but we've got to believe it. We've got to put that right in front of us. I'm such a believer. Whatever it is that you're creating in your life, you've got to have it. And this is the same with joy. You've got to have it in front of you. You've got to have things, touchstones or visions or goals. You've got to keep it out there, because there is so much negativity that our brain is focusing on even subconsciously.
Right, and you don't need a lot of people telling you that you can't do it.
Nope, and you don't want to. Can I tell you how many people told me not to do my seminars? And I was sold out. The last one sold out. I had to turn away people. So.
Well, and again, speaking of that, because I know we mentioned it was in Irvine, but we really didn't go into much detail. And as much as I can't believe it, we're almost out of time. This time has flown by. Can you tell us?
That's when you're having fun.
That's right.
That's right.
Tell us where it's going to be, when it's going to be, and again, how is the best way for them to get in touch to register?
Okay, it's the Doubletree Hotel in Irvine on April 24th and 25th. It's a Friday evening, 6:30 till 9, and then Saturday from 9 till 5. And the best way, and if you can't make it Friday night is good, but sometimes people just come on the Saturday if they're not able to make it. It's $149 for the day and a half. I do offer scholarships if people are in a position they can't afford it. I don't like turning people down. If they're passionate, they want to learn, we can talk. And it is, the best way to register is online at www.lifethroughintention.com. Life Through Intention, LifeThrough, Intention, INTENTION.com. You can always email me again or call me. My seminar line is 949-296-8366, or you can call me on my other line, that's fine too, 949-597-7217. But there is, you can register online if you just hit on the seminar buttons. And my next one will be in July, and that one's Living as Life with Meaning and Purpose. And then in October, I do the last one for the series, and that is Awakening to Possibility. All four of them are great. And as I said, you can do just one, two, or all four. It doesn't really matter.
Well, let me ask this. And because we are internet radio, and so we email this out to people all across the world. Now, how far are you from either doing this to where somebody could then watch it online or from another location?
We're getting there, Alan. We're getting there. This is, it's actually been such an amazing project for me, because it just started off as me. What happened was, I started writing a book, and my clients kept saying to me, you need to offer this to the world. It's incredible. And so, because I kept finding I was sharing sort of similar information. So it just started off being a little pet project, and sort of grew pretty quickly without too much effort. So now I'm just talking right now with being able to do a DVD. I'm also looking at doing webinars. I'm not there yet, but hopefully within 6 months I'd like to see that I have that up and running.
Well, if there's anything I can do to help, please let me know.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
And I thank you so much for coming on. I actually wish that we had more time. I look forward to meeting you in person. In fact, if I can make arrangements to be there, I will do so myself.
And that'd be great.
I look forward to meeting you and hopefully seeing you again soon or talking to you soon.
I appreciate being part of your show, and I just hope that one person today gets this information and really runs with it. And as I said, if they want to email me, if I can make that difference out there, I'd be happy to return that email or return that call and help them move forward in their life.
All right. Thank you, and have a great week.
You too. Thank you so much, Alan.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.